The topic of our talk is going to be Aliyah, and specifically, they didn't tell me about these things, but that's the topic. There's many wonderful advantages to making Aliyah. One of which is that we have one day of Yom Tov. But actually, coming here this week was nice because I got two clock changes. We changed the clock last week in Israel and got an extra hour. And changed it last night, so you know.
You're well rested.
Well, 2 days. Of, you know, the problem is I had jet lag and I was up at 4:30. Didn't help me. So I'm going to talk about Aliyah. I have to admit, though, that I'm a little torn as to how to do this, whether or not to talk about the good things, or whether or not to talk about the struggles. And in talking about the struggles, how much of that is personal? And how much of that is just what it is when you make Aliyah? So I'll be descriptive of my own experience, and some of that would be relevant to others. How many people are thinking about Aliyah? Okay. Okay. So I'm going to divide this up into three different parts. One, I'm going to talk about the spiritual meaning of what I think Aliyah is. I'm going to talk about some of the realities of the challenges, and then just some general reflections. So let me say the following. We made Aliyah 4 years ago. At that point, I was 50 years old. Now I'm 55. So we made Aliyah at a point of life which presented great challenges personally, and I'm not going to whitewash any of this. I'm going to say exactly what I think what our experience was in making Aliyah. When you move to Israel, someone came up to me this morning and said that I had mentioned Friday night in a talk that I gave at the Bayit, that making Aliyah was difficult. So he came up to me this morning and said, "Now you said making Aliyah was difficult. Now what's difficult about it?" And I thought that's so interesting because it's so obvious to me what the challenges are in making Aliyah, and it just was curious to me that others wouldn't think. So I'll just be brief about this. Anytime you move from one place to another place, there are going to be challenges, whether that's from South Africa to Canada, or whether it's from Toronto to Montreal, or whether it's from Canada to Israel. Any displacement is difficult. Rashi says, when he talks about the commandment made to Abraham, Lech Lecha, go from your country to the land of Israel, so Rashi says, Hashem gave him three promises because those are the hard things when you move from place to place. He said to him, "I'll promise you that you'll be famous there, you'll have family there, and you'll be blessed." The challenge is when you move from one place to the other is you lose those things. You lose your family, you lose your fame, and you lose your fortune. Financially, it's difficult. So it's very difficult to describe what that impact is until you experience it. So, you know, I'm just saying personally, everything about the life at the beginning was different, and I feel for ourselves that we were in shock for probably 2 years. We're there 4 years. Now I don't feel I'm in shock, but we were in shock for 2 years. What's different? The most dramatic difference, one thing was that for me personally, I went from a situation in which I knew a lot of people knew me. I felt I was doing something that was valuable in contributing to society here as the rabbi of a shul and communal work, and went there and it was nothing. Zero. No one knows you. No one is calling you, no one is asking you for help, no one cares really, and I felt personally, I felt very, very alone. Even though we knew people, we met people, we had friends there, we had family there, whatever, felt very much alone. So that's not necessarily an experience which everyone will have. You hear many people say, oh, I moved to Modi Inn, I moved to Efrat, and you know, every Shabbos for 6 months people were inviting me for meals, and you know, it was wonderful. Like for some people that's true. That is what happens. In the cities that happens less, in Yerushalayim that happens less. And so to some extent, for us personally, the beginning was a very lonely experience. Almost everything is different in living. And in this, I want to frame this in a different way. We have two different parts of our lives. Our day-to-day life, our practical, physical, this worldly life. And then we have the part of life which is our internal experience of life. So Rav Soloveitchik said this once in a way that very much resonates with me. He said that when Avram was told to go to the land of Israel, he said he was drawn to the land of Israel because it was a holy place. He wasn't told which way to go. Which bus do I get on? When Hashem says, go to the place, I'll show you. He didn't know which direction, but he knew. He was drawn to the land of Israel. When he gets to the land of Israel, says he went to Shechem, and then he traveled on to Beitel, and Rashi says he was drawn south towards Jerusalem. So this is as accurate as I can describe for myself. Physically, life is one thing, but I personally always felt, as much being born in Ottawa, living here for 15 years, I never felt fully at home at any place that I was at. Even having a home, a house, a family, a community that was very enjoyable and warm. And so on a certain physical level of life, the house and the car and the community and the Shabbos or whatever it was, on a physical level, I felt at home, but on a certain level, I never did. I always felt a sense that there is something that my soul needs which it's not getting. And again, and this is in working in a way that I felt was very meaningful, in servicing people and helping people and teaching Torah and professionally in a very gratifying work. But that's on one level. On another level, is my soul at home in this world? I always felt not so much in Toronto, or in Ottawa, or in New York, when we were in New York. In making Aliyah, the physical part changes completely. There's a complete change. The size of the place that we live in is a half of the size of what we lived in Toronto. You know that place where you take all the junk called the basement? There's no basement. There's a machzan. Not a basement. So physically it's different. The food is different. We don't have a car. Take the bus. The living is different. The supermarkets are different. Everything on the physical level is different. So you adjust to that. I would say on the level of the neshama or the soul, people say to me, so how is Israel? Are you enjoying it? Enjoying is not the right word. It's not that I wake up every morning and I go, I'm in paradise. This is Gan Eden. This is where in the world I want to be. It's not that. And it's not that when I walk down the street, I feel, can't believe that I'm living here. This is like what I've dreamt of my whole life. It's not that. But there are moments in which I feel that my neshama is where it needs to be, and there's a latent sense that I have, I feel all the time that I'm at home, and this is where I need to be. That's the most accurate way I can describe what the experience is. There are wow moments. There are definitely wow moments. When I find my wow moment is most often on Friday night or on Chagim, where I'll feel on a Friday night as I walk out of the house and we're going to walk, and it's so quiet. And I think to myself, this is where a Jew should live, in a Jewish state that has a Shabbos and is run according to what we believe in. This is a society in which the Torah is being manifest. Not completely, still cars going around, whatever, but that's the wow moments that I have. Let's just leave it at that for now. Now I want to talk a little bit. So that's kind of the backdrop to the Aliyah for myself. If people make Aliyah with the expectation that I'm now moving to the Garden of Eden, I'm going to be in Gan Eden, I'm going to be happy all the time, I'm going to be, you know, everyone's going to be hugging me, and it's going to be great, that's not an accurate expectation. There's so many different things that are different. I want to talk about one thing which breaks all Canadian sensitivities, because you never talk about these things in public, and that's money. We're going to talk about money. This is something which, when we moved to Israel, we did not know. I may have read things, I may have heard things, it didn't sink in at all how different the financial structure of life is in Israel as opposed to in Canada. Let me just say the following. Anyone here a nurse or a teacher? What would a starting salary for a nurse be in Ontario? Approximately. For someone graduating from nursing school? So my daughter-in-law just graduated from Hadassah, passed her boards, and her starting salary will be 5,000 shekels. 5,000 shekels is about $18,000 a year. My son, who's studying, is going to be studying education, so his starting salary in a school will be also 5,000 shekels. Now, if my daughter-in-law gets her master's, what? 5,000 shekels a month. All Israeli, this is hard also to get. All the Israeli salaries are monthly, so you have to kind of always make the adjustments over that. What?
And after taxes.
Yeah. Yeah, or as Yosef said to me, Abba, if you're making 5,000 shekels, you're not paying a lot of tax. You're not going to be getting to the threshold with two or three kids as well. So 5,000 shekels is the starting out. If you have a master's as a nurse, of course you get a higher salary. You're going to get 200 more shekels a month. So you'll get $700 more dollars a year. So the salary, these are professions. This is not blue collar, these are professions. Someone asked me to do some work with them, for which I felt they were going to get quite a benefit from my work. So they asked me what I would like to be paid on an hourly basis. So I told them, I think $50 an hour would be reasonable. $50 an hour by Canadian standards is, he told me, $50, are you the Prime Minister? He said, Netanyahu doesn't get paid that. If you get paid in Israel 20,000 shekels a month, which is approximately $60,000 a year, that is a very, very high salary. You know, that's already in the upper realms. Doctors, what we think of, doctors and lawyers and accountants, may make that much. So that's a challenge. Now, at the same time, housing costs, I'm just telling you the blunt realities. The median income in Israel is $20,000 a year. The median American income is $30,000 a year. The median Israeli housing cost is $383,000. The median American is $152,000. So you're earning not quite half, and you're paying twice as much for housing. And that's just the reality. So if you have a young couple who are making Aliyah, or actually an old couple making Aliyah, the housing costs in Tel Aviv and in Yerushalayim are amongst the highest in the world, and the earning power is very, very low. It's just low, that's what it is. Now, there are professions that do better. This is a chart of the produced by the government that describes what the salaries are in the general government and financial corporations and the like. So in insurance companies, banks and the like, a person, the average income would be 16,000 shekels, which would be about $50,000, and that's the highest earning. Now, there are places that can do better. Also from the government agency, they rated various different companies which are the highest earning potential in Israel, which would be in the area of
high tech.
So Intel, the salary range in Intel on a yearly basis is 180,000 shekels to 440,000 shekels. So the highest range would be $120,000. IBM, the salary range, well, they have the CEO makes 3 million shekels, which would be $800,000. That's a lot. Johnson & Johnson, the highest level salary is 336,000 shekels, which should be less than $100,000. This is the high-tech, highest level earning potential, and that's the highest salary. Most of the people working there are making much less than that. Those are the realities. The realities is that a salary of $100,000 is almost unheard of. It's not going to be there. And also, if you make in the area of 20,000 shekels a month, which would be, let's say, that $60,000 range, you're in the highest tax bracket. The taxes are going to be 40%. So your take home is going to be not 60,000, but 36,000. So the financial reality of living in Israel, you have to break your head. You have to just get yourself completely out of a Canadian and American thought process, shatter that completely, and to move then into an Israeli frame of mind. Now, one of the big challenges that Netanyahu has been talking about, and Steinitz was talking about, the Minister of Finance, Yair Lapid is talking about, is trying to bring the housing costs down. The housing costs are impossible. Well, how does it work exactly? The way it works is, for everyone who wants to buy that house that's costing in Yerushalayim $800,000, you got someone who's selling it. So the person who owns it is very wealthy. The person who's buying it doesn't have a chance. So it is a double-edged sword. The fact that real estate is so high has made many Israelis very wealthy. But it's made other people who want to buy in a pinch. So how does it work? So Joyce and I, when we first made Aliyah, and we were grappling with these numbers or whatever, we said to ourselves, how does the society work financially? I don't get it. If you're making $50,000 and your expenses or higher than that, and you don't have a house yet, and then you have to buy a house. How did the whole thing work? So someone said to us, well, it's very simple. For every couple that's looking for to buy an apartment, they have someone else who's paying for it. That's how it works. The parents are buying it for the kids. Or Americans who are moving there are coming with a lot of money. If they're not coming with a lot of money, then it's very hard. That's just kind of the reality. Cars cost twice as much as what they cost here. Gas costs twice as much. Tuition for kids, if they're in the regular government schools, will be minimal. But if they're in private schools, will be about $4,000 a year, that's good. But by Israeli standards, it's a lot. Also, I'll just end the bad news now. There is an age discrimination in hiring. People who are over the age of 50 will have a lot of trouble finding jobs. It's very, very difficult if you're over 50 to get a job. That's because a lot of this stuff is high-tech related. They're always going to hire young people. But also because it's a youth-oriented hiring society. They just want to hire young people. Also, much of the job search and the job networking works on friends and acquaintances and who you know, and the army is absolutely critical in having connections. The bond that both men and women have with people that were in their pluga or in the unit in the army is a lifetime bond. And if the people are looking for a job and they contact people in their army unit, they have a step up on everyone else. Much of the hiring in the country occurs through army connections, who you knew when you were back in the army, which is a wonderful thing if you were in the army. And if you were not, then you're at a serious disadvantage. The last thing I'll just mention about that, maybe this is too personal. I said to Rabbi Daniel Beller, who's a wonderful rabbi in Ranana, when I was on a trip before we made Aliyah, someone said, oh, you should meet him because he's a successful rabbi and you should meet him. So I met him and he said to me, you're thinking of Aliyah? I said, yeah. He said, it's a cemetery for rabbis. You'll never get a job as a rabbi, which is true. There are no jobs for rabbis in Israel. So one of the biggest challenge in Aliyah is in the financial realm. Whoever's considering Aliyah needs to know clearly that it is a different financial world. You're not going to live the same way in any shape or form. When Joyce, my wife, is in Israel now, so she sent me an email last night, and she said, by the way, you should mention the following things. She gave me this long list right here. So the first thing she wrote down was the ability to purge. The first thing you should tell people if they're considering all the guys, get rid of everything you own, because you will not have place to put it in your place when you move to Israel, because they're a third the size of what you're living in. So you get. Now, I just said a lot of the negatives. Let me say a few of the positive things. The difference, I spoke before about the physical life we have and kind of the neshama. On the physical level, you can get used to anything. The fact that we live in a beautiful apartment, but it's half the size of the house that we lived in, is absolutely fine for me. I really don't care. It doesn't really matter to me. And the fact that we have to get rid of a lot of the things that we had, I don't care. I couldn't care less. Or that we don't have a car and take the bus. So what? You get used to it. We're not so stuck in our ways that we can't get used to things. Those are not so hard to get used to. And the fact that it never goes down to 20 below, that's fine. I can get used to that. That's good. So she also mentioned, let me mention some of the things that I think are important. People are different personalities. You have a lot of different personalities in life. You have those of us who are accepting, easily malleable to our situations, and those of us who have hard time accepting changes in our life. If we are of the malleable type, in other words, whatever it is going on, we're going to adjust and be fine. So those are the people who will be successful in Aliyah. Go with the flow. You have people who are very critical. And those of us who are critical will have a lot of good material in Israel, because there's a lot to be critical of. There's a lot to be critical of in the government, interpersonal relationships, and how business is conducted. People are very aggressive. People feel, I will ask for as much as I can, knowing that I'll probably satisfy for love, but I'm going to ask, I'm going to go ahead and ask. Canadians wouldn't do that as much. We would say, what's reasonable, let's offer what's reasonable. That's not the way it works there. It's not the way it works in the political realm. The political realm is very, very disappointing. It's very disappointing what goes on in politics. The statements people make and the things people do is very disappointing. There are those of us who are malleable and those of us who are going to have trouble with that. I'll just mention one little story. A few weeks ago, let me say a positive thing. The people, everyone's got a story. The people that we've had the good fortune of meeting, you feel like, what an honor to meet people. Who are the Anglos, the English speakers, who are making Aliyah? To a large extent, it's the most committed, accomplished, Jewishly people who are making Aliyah. So there's wonderful people around. So we live right next to Brian Alevi. Brian Alevi is a wonderful, wonderful scholar in Tanakh, just a really wonderful person. We've become very good friends. So her daughter runs the educational program in the Army called Nativ. The Nativ program in the Army is for those predominantly Russians who are not Jewish, and it's an introduction to Judaism program in the Army. At the end of the Nativ program, they're given the option whether they want to go on for conversion, but the Nativ is a general program. So she asked us if we would host three women from the Army on for their Shabbat experience at the end of Nativ, when they're thinking about whether or not to continue on for to convert. So we had three women staying with us, two from the Ukraine and one from Belgium. All three of them, their fathers were Jewish and their mothers were not. They'd all made Aliyah, two of them 12 years previously, so they're 19 or 20 years old. So they came when they were little children. They grew up in Israel, one in the Golan and one in the Tel Aviv area. So one of the girls said, my plan is that after the Army, I'm moving to Europe and I'm going to open up a Starbucks or a coffee shop. And I have no plans to ever stay here again after the Army. She's doing the Army, but she's going to leave. So he said, why is that? She said, I can't stand the way people treat each other. The harshness and the lack of manners. She said, you know, you go to Europe and people say, please, can I help you? You know, what could I do for you? So there are those who find the harshness of the culture actually impossible to deal with. It grates too much. Our daughter left Israel after 10 years. She made Aliyah, and she left. She said, I don't like the lack of regard people have for the environment, the lack of regard they have for each other, the harshness of the society. She said the people don't care. The lack of politeness, I can't stand it anymore. I don't want to live here anymore. Now, there may have been other things, including the fact that we were living there, that she wanted to leave, but whatever, there could have been other things. I just want to mention some of the other, maybe more positive things. I mentioned the fact that you have a lot of great people. That's something which I feel all the time. I love going to the bus stop. We live in an area that has a lot of an older Sephardic community there. So I'll go to the bus stop and I'll see an older man there and I'll say to him, If I garb as well, you live in the neighborhood, that's all he needs. That's all he needs. Ma, dude, I came here in 1950 and I lived in a tent over there and it rained inside our tent every night and then I built a house over here. And you think, one fella told me, he said, I came here when the rabbi of our community was killed by people because of the state of Israel. They lynched him. This was in Bukharian area. He said, when they lynched the rabbi, we all picked up and left. You think to yourself, you're living in the middle of Jewish history. You're living with people who have made the decision to come to Israel, to live in Israel, and to give their life to Israel. I'll mention a couple of the other things that my wife said about Aliyah. She said that it's important to have a sense of humor, and especially if people come as couples, that you cannot both be down on the same day. If one person's having a bad day, the other person should not. That's really important. And to try and help each other. But also to enjoy the fact that it's a holy place. She said also, this is really interesting. I found myself in the past 4 years, I've changed as a person in what I think and how I feel religiously. She calls it, you become a besherder. You become a besherder. In other words, you assume an attitude that things don't just happen, especially in Israel, that there is a puppeteer who is pulling the strings, and too many things happen that you just think there's something going on here. I'll say for myself, not necessarily on a personal level, but I had that in the most recent confrontation with in Gaza, when the rockets were being fired in, and the Kippur Barzel was intercepting the rockets. You think to yourself, this Kippur Barzel, the Iron Dome, wasn't here 2 years ago, and if it wasn't here now, it would have been horrible. It would have been terrible. We had the first siren, the air raid siren in Yerushalayim, on Friday night to go to shul. And we're davening mincha, and then the air raid siren goes off. You know, like you think to yourself, I don't know what to do in an air raid siren. What do you do? And all these guys, you know, they're all army guys who have, you know, finished their army service. They didn't know what to do either. So you do feel like it's besheret. I had a woman come and speak to me about conversion. She was an American, who married an Israeli fella, and they moved to Israel. But she didn't have the proper status to get into the conversion program of the Rabbanut. And she'd started with the RCA, the Rabbinical Council of America, conversion program in the States. So she met with me that I should guide her through the process. And when she gets ready for conversion, she'll move back to the States, finish her conversion there. By law, you have to spend a year after the conversion there, and then she'll come back. So she met with me, and I said to the fella, I said to her, what kind of work do you do? She says, I'm a lawyer for a law firm in Birmingham, Alabama. So I was the rabbi in Birmingham, Alabama. So I liked her right away. And then I said to the guy, I said, what do you do? He says, I'm in the Air Force. I said, what's your job in the Air Force? He said, I'm the commander of the Kippat Barzel. I'm the commander of the Iron Dome unit. I thought, like, this is like a modern day hero. He's running this unit which saved who knows how many lives. Anyway, needless to say, when the Air Force found out that the two of them were going to have to move to New York to finish their conversion, she got into the Rabbanut's conversion program. They said, this guy can't leave the country. We're not letting this guy leave the country. It's national security. One of the cultural things also, I just mentioned, there was an interview with Barry Topf, who was in the Bank of Israel, one of the top people in the Bank of Israel, and he was talking about the culture of Israel in financially. And he said the following. This is, again, part of the cultural difference between Israel and Chutz Laaretz. He said, he's talking about closing the gap between the wealthy and the general population. He says, speaking personally, not as a central bank economist. I think you can't look to policymakers to solve all the issues. Some of the problems are ethical, they're behavioral. If you ask me, there's a problem with the incentives in the economy. I don't think it's a legal or economic issue. People shouldn't look to the legal or policy. It's managers and owners who have to look at their responsibility to their workers differently. There's a culture that of helping each other, which is part of the economic gaps which exist in Israel today. I'll just close with a couple of just brief stories, just to close on a positive note. Amongst many of the different cultural things, there's one of the cultural things which I can't get used to, which is, first of all, I'm the only guy in my shul that wears a suit. All the other guys come in, they're all wearing white shirts and whatever. I'm the only guy that wears a suit. But not only do they wear white shirts, they wear the white shirts out. Like, for Mincha on Shabbos, I don't wear my suit. I just take out my jacket. But they wear their shirt out. So I can't get used to that. And the other thing is, my son said to us recently, he said, our grandchild is going to be 3 years old soon, and he's going to have his first haircut. So we didn't not give our kids haircuts till they were 3 years old. We gave them haircuts right when they were born, you know, from the beginning. So I said to him, Yosef, is Rafael Yaakov going to have payas? He said, Abba, his payas are going to be really long. He's going to have really long payas. I think to myself, what is this? We're going to have a grandchild with payas? Let me just close with this. The reality is, for those who are thinking of Aliyah, contemplating Aliyah, everyone's experience is different. There's a lot of challenges, cultural challenges, lifestyle challenges, financial challenges. It's on the level of the physical life, it's dramatically different. But I will say, just as I said at the beginning, I'm just telling you personally, my soul is a rambling soul. I've always felt as comfortable as a physical life as it is in Canada. Big homes, comfortable homes, lovely cars, Starbucks, getting big roads, politeness. With all of those things, I never have felt that my soul is fully at home. I just never felt that. I felt that I'm in my physical home, but I'm not really in my spiritual home. And in Israel, it's a rough and tumble place. The manners are not what I'd like them to be. The politics are for sure are not what I'd like them to be. The religious life and the rabbinic structure is very hard to tolerate. And there's many things that are irritating on a physical level and make life hard and frustrating. But on a very deep level, and it's not every day walking down the street, and it's not every morning waking up, and it may not even be every week, but I feel on a latent, deep level that my soul is where it needs to be, and my soul is home, even if my body is irritated. Thank you.